Hello, and welcome to the FM Podcast. I'm Jen Fritz, and I run Fritz Media, a music publicity and digital marketing firm located in Vancouver, Canada. And this is episode number 56 of the podcast. So the topic of this week's show is music production and songwriting tips. And joining me on the show is British electronic musician, producer, and podcaster, Mark Matthews. Now, this was a really fun conversation because I was a guest on Mark's podcast, Inside the Mix, last month. We discussed music promotion and social media. And it's a really great episode, by the way, if you haven't checked it out. I'll link to it in the show notes for you, for those of you that haven't listened to it yet. And it was, you know, kind of great to switch things up to interview him on my podcast. We had a great discussion about the basics of music production and writing songs, and he also had plenty of amazing tips and advice to pass along for indie musicians, so make sure you take some notes. It was a really great chat, and I hope you enjoy it. Here's my conversation with Mark Matthews. Well, hello, Mark. How are you doing today?
I am very well, thank you. Yes, I'm excited to be here. It's always nice being on the other side of the proverbial microphone. So I'm very excited for this. Thank you.
It's a little weird, hey, when it happens.
It is because I'm usually the one with the script and everything, with everything prepped, ready to go. So it's interesting. It's always interesting being on the other side, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's so good to see you. The last time that I saw you was when I was on your podcast called Inside the Mix. That was early. We did that earlier this year, right?
Like we did, yeah. I cannot remember the episode number, which is really bad of me. But I will say that it has been one of the most popular episodes this year. And I thought it would be.
That's awesome.
Because it is centered around the music industry and marketing and sort of this new era we find ourselves in with AI and whatnot. And it's particularly important, although it's a podcast about mixing music production.
Yeah.
Obviously, part of that entails, as an artist, promoting yourself. So, it's really, really popular.
I liked that conversation. I really enjoyed being on your show.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. It's really good. It's not often I have sort of marketing experts on the show. So it's really refreshing. And it was a great chat.
Yeah. And also, like you, I was happy to be on the other side of the mic. Yeah. Like I was like, oh, I don't have to do anything. I just sit
here.
It's
less work, isn't it?
Yeah. It's less panic a little bit, right? Yeah. All right. So to get things started here, I'm going to begin with the question that I like to ask all of my guests. And that is, how did you get your start in music?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So from a young age, I played guitar. So since I was about 12 or 13, if I remember rightly, I had a next door neighbor and they worked in the guitar shop, if I remember rightly, and they sold me a guitar for 30 quid. And I'd always been interested in music. I wasn't really in a musical household. None of my sort of siblings or any of my extended family or my close family play an instrument. I'm the only one. But I've always been interested in music. And then I saw the guitar, picked that up, ran with that, tried to teach myself guitar for a while. Realized that I wasn't very good at teaching myself, then went down the whole rabbit hole of online tablature and whatnot. And then I joined a band, I think I was like 19 or something like that. And it was a heavy metal band.
Oh.
And so I was in that band for about 10 years, I think it was. And then we went in the studio and I realized that my technique was terrible. And then I had to get lessons. But it was in the studio that I realized that I liked the other side of the glass, as we call it. So I was the artist being recorded, but I saw the engineer working. I was like, I want to know what that guy's doing. How is he doing that? And what is he doing to the music to get it to come out like that through those monitors? And that took me down this whole pathway then of academia. So I got a degree in music production and then I got a master's degree in music engineering and production as well. And then from that and that experience, I was able to sort of double down and then start offering services as a mastering engineer. Primarily now, I was doing mixing. I still do mixing as well and production. I produce my own music as well. So I left the metal band and now I release my own music under my own name, which is synth music. So I've gone the other way now.
Yeah, you totally did.
Yeah. But what I find is having done the podcast, there's so many artists that have done it. They move from, I don't know what it is, moving from heavy metal and death metal, that was the band I was in, into like this synth pop. I've always been quite interested in it. And I released an EP last year. So I'm still doing that, but now I sort of moved into freelancing, what with mastering, bit of mixing as well. So the website's synthmusicmastering.com. And then I've got the podcast as well. Mm-hmm. I'm a trained teacher as well. So I was previously a teacher in another life, as it were.
Wow. You've done so much, Mark.
I know. I have been very busy. And that's why the side of my head, for the audience can't see this, but I've got it's very gray on the side, having done all this stuff. And then, yeah, the podcast is because I like talking to people and I'm quite like, having been a teacher, I like delivering and disseminating knowledge. Mm-hmm. So the podcast is like the perfect platform to do that. And that kind of leads me to where I am today. So that's kind of like a whistle-stop tour through how do I got to where I am now.
So do you see your podcast as an educational tool? Is that kind of what you look at it?
Yeah, 100%. It is. Yeah. It started out with mainly interviews, but as time's progressed, I've dialed back the interviews. I probably do like one a month, unless it's like a really exciting, they can only do this particular date sort of thing. But there's tutorials in there as well. So I do tutorials in Logic Pro and Reaper, although it's information that you can take and then take it into other DAWs as well. But I also get the listeners on the podcast and do what's called a producer kickstart, where they join me, talk about their pain points, their challenges, and I offer some advice on the podcast. More often than not, it's useful, I hope. And it's that educational tool. I just like giving out all that knowledge I've got. And I find as well, when I'm learning something, because you are always learning, right, mm-hmm. as an artist, like the best way I can cement it in my own head is if I get it down on paper and then reproduce it to someone else. And I find that's the best way I can understand new concepts. And I still do that. Like I said, you're always learning. And yeah, I mean, in short, it's definitely an educational platform. And it's free as well, which is what I like about it. Not for me. But for the audience listening, it's free. Yeah, it is free. Yeah, because you can go on YouTube and listen to it, or there's loads of free podcast platforms.
That's kind of like where my podcast came from too. I started out like probably in the same way you did, which was just as a sort of branding tool, a way to market my company, like it was just another way to do that. And then after the first few episodes, I realized that actually this is an educational tool. I mean, there's so many artists out there that are just so overwhelmed by the amount of information on the internet that they're just like, I don't know. Like, I know the information's there. And then it's like one website will tell you one thing and one website will tell you the other thing. And I think so many artists just get stuck.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what do I do? Oh my goodness. All right. So the topic for this week's show is music production and songwriting tips. And I wanted to talk to you about this because this is something that you regularly talk about on your podcast. So, mm-hmm. I figured you would be a wealth of information on the topic.
Hopefully.
So we're kind of going to start with the absolute basics and sort of speak in the absolute basics.
Yeah.
If I'm an indie musician just starting out and I want to write some songs and record them, what is my starting point?
I think your starting point there, if you want to record, you're going to need an audio interface for one, which is going to be a way for you to plug in a microphone, or if you're using a keyboard, you could plug in using MIDI into an audio interface so you can capture that audio. So you've got things like there's Focusrite, Native Instruments do one as well, SSL do one. There's many, many, and you can get them at varying degrees in terms of value. So you're going to need one of those to get started. That way you can actually record what you are playing into what's called a DAW. So you've got your digital audio workstation, and there are many digital audio workstations out there. And my advice there would be, if you can, is to use the trials available and try them out, because you'll hear, this is the thing with digital audio workstations or DAWs. You will speak to one person and they'll say one thing. You speak to another, like you mentioned there about the information on the internet, and someone will say, nah, that's rubbish. You want to do this one. I use Logic Pro, mm-hmm. and I also use Reaper as well, mm-hmm. for mastering. I use Logic Pro for mixing and production, but I've used Pro Tools when I was in the studio. I've used Ableton as well. Ableton I love. I just never dedicated time to it. The only one I haven't used is Cubase. So you kind of need to find which one works for you. If you're an Apple user, which I know a lot of artists are, GarageBand through Apple is a really good place to start, because it comes free. Well, nothing's free with Apple, but it comes with a laptop or whatever it is you have. And that's a really good place to start. It's like a watered down really accessible version of Logic Pro. So you can get to grips with that. Then when you get your feet under the table with that, you can then move on to using Logic. And that's a really good place to start. So fundamentally, you need your digital audio workstation and your what we call a DAC or digital audio interface to then record yourself. And then it's finding that DAW. There are free ones out there as well. I can't think of any. I think Audacity you can record into. So if you really did want to trial it out, try before you buy. Audacity is a good place to start. Also, Reaper is free for 60 days. Ooh. However, it's a very steep learning curve. What I will say with that. It's a very steep learning curve.
I think that if you've never done any recording before, if you have a Mac, starting out with GarageBand is a good place to kind of get a feel with how things work, right?
Yeah, most definitely. And I get artists submit projects to me and they're still using GarageBand and they sound great. Like it depends on what you want to do. I mean, if you're just recording because you can record at high sample rates and bit depths and whatnot, and then you can do some processing, you can drag some loops in there, you can create a composition, get a scratch track down that you can then send to a producer if you want, say, this is my idea, what can I do with this? Mm-hmm. And you can use GarageBand to do that. And it's all about, like, you don't really want to run before you can walk. It's kind of like when, like, you start something, you buy all the expensive gear, but you don't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
You know, I've done that.
Yeah, I say that to people that want to start podcasts too. Like, just try out like an Audacity or a GarageBand just to get it. Like, especially if you've never worked, you know, with an interface like that before. Mm. Once you kind of get the basics down, try around and see which ones work better for you.
Yeah, 100%. And it really depends. As an artist, you might be someone who is electronic and you'll be very much in the box. You might. Because the great thing about today's day and age is that you can create music and not actually play an instrument, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could go into the box and you could just be totally digital and you could get some ideas down. I'm a guitarist. So I think being a musician does help. I think it gives you that extra kick. Like, you're kind of a few steps ahead of those who don't. But DAWs, you'll find, like, they do tend to lean towards what music that is you're producing. Like, Ableton's a great one for performance. Mm-hmm. Logic's a great one as well. I think Logic's quite broad. Pro Tools is used heavily in the industry for recording and mixing. And you got Cubase as well. Cubase is fantastic too. So you'll find that depending on what it is you're doing, you'll gradually find your way to the door that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and everyone's different, right? Like, our brains work differently. So it's just whatever you're most comfortable with when you're doing your creating. How does... the songwriting aspect of it kind of move into this? It can be a solitary thing. It's something that I do myself, right?
Yeah.
What's like, is it just, I'm going to start writing a song? Is it just as simple as just writing it down and figuring it out and going from there?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because through the podcast, I've asked this one as well, because it's one of those ones like, well, how do you start a song? And what I've come to realize is, and I do this now, is one of the key bits of information or top tips I can give is to, once you're familiar with a DAW, is to create a template. And that template is so that when you have, let's say, inspiration strikes, or you, one thing I'm an advocate of, this is going on a bit of a tangent here, is if you're in the creative zone, as it were, is to dedicate time every day and, like, don't wait for inspiration. Just sit down in front of your DAW and just start to knock something out, and like start writing something. And having a template really helps with that. For example, in Logic, I've got a template, and it is, because I mainly do synth music now, I've got some stock drums. I've got a bass synth that I'll use, a VST. I've got a pad as well, and I've got a lead. I've got an arp and maybe some effects. And I know I can open that template and I can immediately hit the ground running with those sounds and start to write something. What you don't want to do is think, okay, I've got this idea, I'm going to lay down a beat, but I want to find the perfect snare, because you'll just waste your time trying to find that perfect sound. And I hear that a lot on the podcast when I speak to other producers and stuff. Just get a template. Don't worry about the sounds that you're using. Just get the idea down. It's a scratch. It's like a mood board, if you will. Get the idea down. And then once you've fleshed out that idea, you can then think about, okay, I'm going to go in and replace those sounds and start mixing. If you want to, because also you got to think as well, as creatives, I don't know if you do this yourself, but you'll find that you might start something and you've spent all that time finding the perfect sound. And you're like, oh, actually, that's shit, I'm not going to go forward with that. And you've just wasted all that time finding those perfect sounds, VST samples and whatnot. So yeah, my top tip to sort of when it comes to songwriting is to have a template to kickstart that process. Don't wait for inspiration. Just have dedicated time each day, even if it's just like 10 minutes. Like you can knock out an 8-bar loop in 10 minutes and that could then go on to be a great song, you know? And references as well. Another one that I do and I'm an advocate of is have a reference bank. I use Spotify. Obviously, there are others available. And every time I hear a song, I'll put it into what is my song inspiration playlist. So if I'm ever stuck for ideas, I can just dive in there and I can just play something. Oh yeah, I remember saving that because of that particular beat or that particular chorus or that chord progression or that key change. And I use that for inspiration. So that's generally how I start the process. And it's something that I, for want of a better way of putting it, preach on the podcast as well.
Yeah, that's you make a really good point in just like kind of not getting stuck in the weeds right away. Because I do think that that is something, especially with the creative process, that can just stop it altogether before you get started.
Yep.
Instead of just thinking of the long view and the overview, like you're just creating like you said, just a demo, like a rough draft. This is just the idea of the thing that I'm doing. And we're not talking about perfection right now. We don't have to worry about all of the other stuff. We'll do the other stuff later, but let's just get the idea.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. 100%.
All right. So, you know, we currently live in a world where anyone can create and record music, you know, pretty much anywhere, you know, there's bedroom pop for a reason, right?
Yeah.
You can write, you can perform, you can record an album in your home, in your bedroom, if you want to. As an artist, how do you make the decision to produce it yourself or to hire a professional producer or engineer or mixer to do it for you?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I think one of the key parts of that comes down to finances
a lot of
the time with music. Yeah, because if you're outsourcing, now I'm a big advocate of like outsourcing something. If I'm not good at something and there's someone else who can do it better and I've got the means to sort of access that service, I'm going to outsource it. But not everybody has that availability. So I think it really depends on where you want to take your music. I had this conversation with someone the other day on Inside the Mix about assistant mastering. And he mentioned the point of like, it really depends on where you want to go or what you want to do with your music. Do you want to invest all that money now and then in years' time have a legacy product that stands the test of time and you're not worried about the financial outlay? Or do you just want to quickly release something and then go for sort of maybe quantity over quality, if that makes sense? Bit of a tangent. But when it comes to outsourcing, mixing, mastering, and production, yeah, it really comes down to finances. I think you will get to a stage whereby you have done all you can, and then you're going to need to get that extra sort of kick to push it forward. I think mastering's a big one in particular, because there's plenty of resources out there, and it's exercising that creative muscle. As you well know, like the more you do something, you put in the reps, you're going to get better at it. And I think that's the case with mixing. The more songs that you mix and production as well, the more that you do, the better you're going to get at it. But when it comes to mastering in particular, it's just a second set of ears that will listen to your song objectively, because you can get very much, like you mentioned there, bogged down in the weeds with your own music and lose focus and objectivity. And I think mastering's weird. If I was going to outsource something for the first time, it would be mastering. That would be my advice.
Yeah.
Because it's the second set of objective ears.
Yeah,
100%. And it's going to make sure that that song is radio ready. It's ready for distribution. It's as it should be. It's in the correct file format with the correct metadata, and it's going to stand the test of time. When it comes to the other ones, I think mixing is, if you've got the ability to do it, I mean, it will free you up as a creative. If you're a musician and you're writing your own music, if you're outsourcing mixing and mastering, it means that you've got more time to then just write. But I, as you probably have seen yourself, I see more and more musicians, artists mixing their own music. And with regards to the production as well, having a producer really helps in that you've got someone, again, to begin with, can be objective and you can bounce ideas back and forth. Now, if my bit of advice there is, if you don't have the ability to get a producer or a mix engineer, or even a mastering engineer, then build a network of artists in your sort of niche, your genre, supportive artists who you can send your music to for feedback. I think that's huge.
Yeah, that's huge. That's really good advice.
Yeah.
It is good to have another set of ears. When you're creating your own music, you know, you can get so lost in the sauce. Do you know what I mean? Like you're just, yep. And I don't know, the creative process is like that. And you kind of have to step outside of it sometimes and share it with other people because they're going to hear things that you aren't. They're going to hear it differently than you because you created it. And so, yeah, you definitely, if you don't have like a producer or a mixer or any of those people around you, yeah, you definitely have musician friends.
Yep.
Just throw it to them and see what they say. And if they can offer any constructive criticism and you can take that advice or not take it. But
that,
you know,
that's an important part of it as well. And I remember saying this with a friend of mine, and we meet regularly. He's a mix engineer and whatnot. And it is like, just because there is feedback doesn't necessarily mean you have to action it, because obviously everyone's got an opinion, and
yes,
you got to think about their listening environment as well. You can go way into the physics of sound and whatnot, and the acoustic treatment of their room and whatnot. But one good thing about doing that as well, I find, is you may have a song and there's a particular part of it that you're thinking, oh, I don't know, that vocal needs to be a bit louder, it's sounding a bit dry there, do I need to push it forward, does it need more verb, do I need some saturation or something? And then you send it to someone for feedback and they don't even pick up on it. And then you realize, oh, actually, I'm worried about at the point of diminishing returns now. So that's another great thing about feedback, I think.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. It's just you're in the weeds at that point and nobody cares, as I like to say. Like,
yeah, 100%. Yeah.
That's a lesson I actually had to learn with the podcast, because when I first started it, I was so like, I'm a perfectionist. So I edit it down to like so perfect.
Yeah, I've been there.
Now I'm just like, who cares? Like, I still do a lot of editing, but it's not to the point that you got to leave some ums in. You got to, you know, just for the conversation flow. And I'm always like, you know what? Mark Maron leaves the ums in.
Yeah.
So. You know what I mean?
I leave them in as well. I leave them in. I mean,
I take some of them out, but you know, it's just, you can't. At the end of the day, I was just like, nobody cares. You're the only one that cares.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think there was something I heard on another podcast, which was like, if you are spending more time editing than the length of the actual podcast episode, then you're probably spending too much time editing. And I was like, actually, that makes perfect sense, really.
It does. That's a lesson I had to learn. I was just like, is this how you want to spend your time?
Oh, like, yeah, tell me about it.
It's insane. And I'm not getting paid for it, Mark. So.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And there are podcast editors out there who are getting paid very good money for doing what I'm spending this time doing right now. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, I have an editor now that she edits the interview portion for me, which is such a savior.
Oh, yeah.
A savior. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's just saved me so much time. And again, that's a good, to your point, if you can outsource,
yeah,
outsource.
Definitely. Free yourself up. And that's the beauty of AI. Is I've noticed that, as you may have done as well, with AI and podcasting and just in like music marketing and stuff as well. Like, leverage AI to help you with regards to stuff like that. And I do it all the time with podcasts, with like show notes. You have to go in and like proofread it and tweak bits.
Yeah.
Because it always spells my name wrong and stuff like that. But it's helped me no end, like streamline the process.
Oh, it's absolutely. Do you think learning how to produce music is a skill that all musicians should learn? And if so, like, any tips for them on how to educate themselves? Like, do you have any resource suggestions?
Ooh, that's a good question. So should musicians learn how to produce?
Like, at least that they should learn the basics, right, of how to produce. Do you think I think that would help them in the studio, like if they're hiring a producer to kind of know the basics?
So when it comes to the producer side of things, do you mean as in like mixing and the actual music production, or just someone sort of in the studio with them who is guiding them?
Yeah, someone in the studio with them.
Yeah.
I'm recording music and maybe I want, maybe if you want to make it more of a collaborative effort, it's helpful if you know more about music production in general.
I think so. I think it's good to have a basic knowledge. I think as a producer, because you'll see some producers, the I guess like the old school producers, who might kick back a bit and probably they will have audio engineers who do that engineering side of things. And that producer is there just to sort of get that song out of that artist, out of that musician. Off the top of my head, I'm thinking of producers like Bob Rock and Rick Rubin and producers like that, who are there literally just to get that song out of that artist, that creativity, and point them and steer them in the right direction. But I think now, so far as producers go, I think it's important to have an understanding of the basics of music production. Things like EQ, compression. Those are probably the two basics that you want to get your head around first, really. EQ, compression, balancing as well. Mm-hmm. EQ in particular as well. Knowing where instruments sit in the frequency spectrum and not overloading bands in the frequency spectrum is key. And compression as well. So you've got dynamic performances, but controlled performances. And the ability to be able to hear that, I think, is really, really important. Do all musicians need to know that? I think they should have an understanding of it. I think at least a basic understanding of it. If you're going into the studio, I think it sets you up in a good place. If you are sat there with the engineer or the producer and you have an idea of what it is they're actually doing on screen. So if they were to turn around to you and say something about EQ or compression, you would have a basic understanding of what they're talking about. I think those are good places to start in particular. And just how to achieve a balance. Like if you're recording into a DAW, just how to create a demo that sounds half decent and you can convey your idea across to another producer or a mix engineer. Because I've received projects in the past whereby, and I mean, maybe a sweeping statement, but I can tell that individual is not familiar with a DAW because it is wild. It's quite wild.
I find that whenever I get music from artists that have recorded it themselves, the ones that I can tell that aren't familiar with it are the ones that are just not mastered. And like, I'm just like, this is not mastered, or you mastered it. You think you mastered it, but you did not master it.
Yeah. probably all they've done is slapped the limiter on the master output and then just pushed it to get it to -8 LUFS.
Exactly. But you can tell, right? Mm. Yeah. So yeah, is there any like, you know, resources or places on the internet that someone could go to, like, just, you know.
Oh yeah. You got my podcast for one, Inside the Mix. Do check that. A nice little plug for myself there.
Do it.
Yeah. If you want to learn more about it and what I do, it's synthmusicmastering.com. And then there's a link there for the podcast and it's available on all podcast platforms. But a resource that I routinely signpost people to is on YouTube, and it's the Isotope Are You Listening series. And which I think is fantastic. It's so good. And there's one video in there in particular that I think is really, really useful. If you're mixing your own music, and if I can remember what it's titled, it's Is Your Mix Ready for Mastering? I think it's titled. And there are just 4 or 5 key points in there that you could use as a checklist to check that your mix is ready for mastering. So yeah, that's Isotope, Are You Listening? And it's free. I think it's fantastic.
Awesome.
That's the one I think of. And there's another one actually. Panorama Mixing and Mastering, I think, is the YouTube channel, and it's Nick DiLorenzo. And that guy, I mean, his knowledge is fantastic, and he goes really into the intricacies of audio and sound. Maybe for some, you don't need to know that much level and that much depth, but there's some really, really good resources on there if you are looking to master your own music in particular, but also mixing as well. So those are probably my two top ones, and they're both obviously free on YouTube for you to digest.
We love free YouTube. That's awesome.
100%.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I think a lot of artists don't even understand what mastering is or what mastering does.
Yeah.
It's always the one thing that people are like, I don't know what it does, but I know I have to do it. You know?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. Just like I said just now, like you do get it, and they'll just slap a limiter on the output and then be done with it. But that being said, like the mastering assistants now available, I think somebody told me the other day there are 22 online mastering platforms, for example, Lander and whatnot. And they are very, very good. They are good. Obviously, they're not going to be as good as a mastering engineer, but they are very, very, very good.
Oh, that's a good tip.
So it's a place to start. It's a place to start. And what I would say is if you do use a mastering assistant is to, if you can, reverse engineer what it's done. So it's got my mix from A to B. How has it done that? And why has it made those decisions? And that will help you understand the mastering process.
Ah, that's a really good point. I like that. Mm. You can figure out what it's doing to understand the idea of mastering, basically.
Yeah, most definitely.
Oh, that's cool. All right. So what about writing a song? You know, you can write a song yourself, or you can collaborate with a songwriting partner, or even with a producer. As a starting point, would you suggest, you know, starting out with the writing of the songs yourself, and then, you know, deciding if you want to bounce it off somebody, or like, because I know it that gets a little dicey. Ooh. Because then you're getting into songwriting credits.
Yeah.
So it's, do you know what I mean? Do I want to give this guy half of the half of the credit, or?
Yeah, most definitely. I think it depends on you as an individual. Some people work better in a silo, where some people work better with others. I mean, when I was in the band, I remember we would have songwriting sessions, and a lot of the time we'd be stood around in our rehearsal space, which should have been for rehearsal really, rather than songwriting, but we wouldn't actually come up with anything, and it wasn't really conducive to the writing process. But when we worked individually, we'd come up with ideas and then bring them to the table as a collective, go through them and decide which ones we want to take forward. So I really think it depends on you as an individual. I personally prefer myself writing on my own initially, and then bringing other artists in to help fulfill that vision for me, whether that's I've got a bassist who comes in and lays down bass for me, because I'm a guitarist who plays bass, and a bassist is much better than a guitarist who plays bass. And then I get singers to come in as well to fulfill that vision again. But I lay the foundation myself. So I've got the idea. I kind of know where I want to take it, but then I get others involved to then sort of push forward that idea. But again, like you mentioned, you do go then down the route of songwriter credits. So you need to outline that quite quickly, in terms of, okay, if they're involved in this, we need to come to an agreement in terms of what percentage songwriting credits and whatnot. So again, it comes down really to like, how much do you want to keep in house and keep to yourself? Mm-hmm. I suppose you got to weigh up, like, I could do it all myself and it could sound really good, or I could get others involved, give away some writing credit, and it could sound great.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
kind of which way you want to go, really.
Yeah. And especially like when you're in a studio and working with a producer, I think it's good to have those conversations about songwriting done up front, because, you know, sometimes a producer will throw an idea at you and you end up using that idea. And so what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that,
yeah.
And how much is that worth on the song?
Yeah, so. It's an interesting one. A lot of the time you'll find that with mix engineers and producers as well, they'll just say, well, this is my flat fee, I don't want any credit. And then they just have a flat fee, and that's kind of nice.
Mm.
And I've been on the other side of that myself. I know an artist have said to me like, oh, do you want percentage? And I'm like, nah, just, you can just pay me outright. And then I'll take that payment. And then if it blows up, that's my choice I've made, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of the time they'll do that. But I think it also comes down to, again, in terms of sort of quantity, if you wanted to push out music quite quick, you could probably do it quicker. I don't know. I was going to say you could do it quicker on your own. But then again, if you've got other people working with you, you could then maybe finish an idea quicker. But then again, if you're working with other people, there's a lot of back and forth. So it really depends.
Mm.
One top tip I do have with that, though, and I find it really useful, there are platforms like Splice that you can go on, and you can get loops, samples, you can get MIDI as well, which you can then drag into your DAW and then use that MIDI for your own VSTs. And it's almost, the way I sort of see it is, it's almost like having another musician in the room with you to bounce ideas off of, but obviously it's royalty free. So if you're working on something and you're thinking, actually, I could do with a particular beat here, or I'm stuck, I don't know what beat I need here, or I've got this song in a particular key, I don't know where to take it, it's not quite sounding right, you can go on something like Splice, plug in the key, the genre, and the tempo, and it will come up with some samples for you, or maybe MIDI, and you could use that to help push your idea forward. So that's another way you could go about it, because they're all royalty free.
Mm.
What I would say to that, though, is if you do use a sample, try and make it your own. Don't just flat out use that sample. Otherwise, you might fall foul of somebody else having the exact same one that you have in a song.
Doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how I look at AI, and that is using it as a framework.
Yeah.
And then like zhuzhing and making it your own, depending on what you're using it in.
Yeah, most definitely.
But not like just like copy and pasting the AI.
Yeah, don't do that.
You know? No, because that's no bueno.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness. That was a really good tip. And you've probably, you know, given out lots of advice to musicians and producers on your podcast over the years. What would you say is the most important piece of advice you can give about producing your own music?
Oh, wow. That's a good, the most important piece of advice. My most important piece of advice would be just, and it's probably quite cliche to be honest, is just write music that you would want to listen to. Mm. Don't write music to fulfill a dream then, but don't write music to, if you see a particular genre of music being really successful in the charts, for example, and I have been guilty of this and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to have a go at that, see if I can be a bit successful. And it fell on its face. I fell on my ass with that. And I knew, and that made me realize, okay, I'm going to stick to what I know and on what I'm good at and what I would want to listen to. And in particular, it's transcended and it's become synth music. And I've got this sort of 80s rock / synth stuff going on. And it's what I want to listen to and it's what my influences are. So yeah, it's quite a cliched one. But I think if you start to write music just to chase a financial goal or something like that, then it becomes quite quickly inauthentic. And I think an audience can hear that.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like when I was on your podcast, I talked about that just with social media and how if you're being inauthentic and not true to yourself on social media, people can tell.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with your music.
Most definitely.
If you're doing something that's not what you want to be creating, people can tell that it's just, it feels wrong.
Yeah, it does. You know? It does. And just to add to that as well, if you think actually, well, my music's quite niche, will anybody want to listen to this? There are, what is it, like 9 billion people on the planet? I can guarantee you that there are people out there who share the same interests as you and will want to listen to your music. You just got to find them.
Yeah, that's one of the good parts of the internet right there is you can always find your people.
Most definitely.
All right, wrapping things up just a little bit here. What are your plans for the next year or so? You know, you've got your podcast, but what else are you working on? Any big projects or plans coming up that we should know about?
Yeah, so the podcast is obviously is running, so it's weekly that a new episode drops. So I'm in the process of creating a limited series podcast and a course, and it's going to be mixing in Logic Pro, just exclusively in Logic Pro. And that's going to be free. So I'm going to drop that all 20 episodes at the same time. And I think it's going to be in the summer sometime. So that's going to be entirely free. There's going to be no paywall for that. So I'm just going to share that because I think I get asked questions a lot about Logic and like mixing in Logic. And I'm like, well, I'll just put this summit together and share it with people. At some point, I'm going to release my own music. I released an EP in December of last year and I've got some songs that I'm sat on. So that's like a project for, in business terms, Q3, Q4. That I'm going to be looking at. Yeah. And then just pushing forward, like the mastering side of things as well and the services I'm offering. So doing more mastering for people. And I've also, at the beginning of this year, I totally forget, I've started taking on coaching clients as well. So people who want to have one-to-one coaching with regards to mixing and mainly mixing, but also music production as well. So I've got some clients that I'm working with now and I'm going to be taking more on more of those over the year as well.
Oh, that's great.
So there's a few different irons in the fire, as we say.
Well, that's the music business these days, isn't it? Like you got to have a lot of things on the go, kind of.
Yeah, 100%. And you got pivot.
Pivot!
Classic word.
I know. It's the worst. Ever since like the pandemic, it's like the word, right?
Yeah, yeah. You got to know when to pivot. Yeah, when the AI, then AI hits and everyone's like, oh shit, I got pivot this way, pivot that way.
Yeah, no, now we're fucked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so now is probably a good time to head on over to our fresh content segment.
Yes.
Every week on the show, we discuss our favorite piece of music content for the week. And we always like to start with the guest. Mm-hmm. So Mark, what do you got?
I've got, so this is a podcast and it's a podcast that I stumbled across recently and it's called the Progressions Success in the Music Industry Podcast. Because I'm always reaching out to other podcasters as well and networking and whatnot. And there was a particular episode here and it's called The Music AI is Coming for Us. The podcast is hosted by Travis Ferentz, who's also a mix engineer. And I thought it was just really interesting because he goes in and it kind of alludes to what a few things we've said on the podcast today about AI and how AI is being used by the music industry. And he mentions platforms now where we can prompt and create music. So you could put in Charlie Puth, for example, singing a particular song and it will generate that for you and do various different genres. Now, at the moment, you can tell the difference. I believe you can tell the difference. And also the sample rate and bit depth isn't as what it needs to be for it to be a professional release. But I think there was discussion on this podcast about where does it sit within the music industry. And it's quite an interesting one because at the moment I could see AI generated music potentially moving into the realm of sort of music that is used in like TV, film, YouTube adverts, social media and stuff like that. Quick music that you want to create to fulfill a purpose.
Yeah, the only place that artists get money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Not great.
But I don't think it's going to take over the actual songwriting side of things. I don't think it's going to have... I think, will it have an impact on actual songwriting and songwriters as a profession? I don't know. And that's why I like this episode, because he mentioned that and I can see it doing that in a way, but there's going to be a cap in quality. So I think that's where, if you're a quality artist, I mean, for me, I don't think you need to be worried, but I could be wrong. That's the way I see it at the moment. I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I'm reluctant just in the sense that I can see a lot of Hollywood studios seeing that they can get music that sounds like what they want for a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And be happy with it. Obviously, bigger scale productions are still going to use the actual artist and pay for it. But, you know, if I'm making, you know, a Netflix series or whatever, and I don't have a big budget, then maybe I'm just going to, you know, use the AI music because it sounds like what I want it to sound like.
Now, I wonder then, is there a case there for like the musicians union to get involved and say like there needs to be something in place to stop this otherwise?
Well, I mean, those conversations are happening, but this is all new tech, right? So
yeah,
we're going to see.
Yeah, it's very interesting though, because that's one podcast, and I've had this discussion on the Inside the Mix a few times as well, and I've listened to it on other podcasts in terms of AI, and it can be quite a divisive subject, and you see varying opinions on it.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of music, we haven't really been hit as hard as other creative mediums at the moment, but I think as
it's coming,
it progresses. Like in the last 2 or 3 years, post-COVID, AI is just like hockey stick curve. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be more of a thing, I think, in the last...
And that's where pivoting comes in.
More 5 years. Year, isn't it? Pivoting. Yeah, pivot. That's when we're like, well, do we have to find another job?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so my fresh content for the week is a song that came out earlier this year from the indie rock band Future Islands. It's a song called The Thief. And it's one of those songs that is a total grower. You know those songs that just kind of grow on you?
Yeah.
In fact, the first time I heard it, I was kind of like, I think this might be bad. Like, I didn't know. I didn't know what to make of it. And
yeah.
And then I was like, as it went on, I was like, okay, yeah, this sounds like Future Islands. I like Future Islands. I was like, I think it's a good, but I'm not sure still. So I have like a playlist of new music I like. So I just threw it on that playlist. And every time it came up on the playlist, I was like, it got better and better. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, this is the greatest song of all time.
Yeah.
Like, I just...
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have that with songs. I'll stick them on a playlist. I'm like, oh, I'll stick it on there. It's all right. Because I have a playlist and people submit music to it. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. I'll stick it on. And then I play it more and more. And I'm like, actually, yeah, this is really grown on me. Or it's so... I don't know. There are particular songs where I listen to it and I'm like, I still don't know if I like it, but I'm going to listen to it. And that it just keeps me going because I cannot decide if I like it or not. And it just keeps you going back to it, which is
it's
a good thing.
It's so crazy though, because I just like every listen, I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. And now I just, I'm obsessed with this song now. Like I listen to it all the time. So I went from this might be shit to like, it's the greatest song of all time.
Yeah.
So...
You should say that. They could use that as their tagline for the next release.
I'm
Our
sure
previous release
it.
Was, yeah, yeah. You might think it's shit, but it will grow on you. Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah, I have this like playlist of every year I do a new songs I like playlist. So if I hear a new song, I just throw it on there. And it's always like a moving mix. Like sometimes stuff comes off
because
I'm like, ugh.
Oh, I've done that.
I was wrong about
I'm
this
like,
one.
What the fuck is that? Why have I put that on there? And it just... I'm like, I did not. I don't know why I was thinking that. Maybe I was like a few drinks deep at that point. I don't know.
Exactly. I'm like, why is this here? But yeah, anyway. Future Islands. It's called The Thief. Give the song a listen, and I'll link to that as well as Mark's pick in the show notes for you guys. Well, I guess that's it.
It's been a pleasure. I say it's been great. It's always nice being on the other side of the microphone, as I say. It's been great. I've really, really enjoyed it. Thank
work.
You. Yeah, it is. I could turn the microphone off and just leave.
Yeah,
which
that's
is quite
it.
Nice. Yeah, I say turn the microphone off. I don't really turn it off, but I'll turn off the computer and then just exit.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And where can people find you if they want to find out more about what you
do? Yeah, the best place to go is synthmusicmastering.com. And then you'll find links to the podcast there. You'll find social media links. You'll find links to my mastering and also the coaching side of things as well. And then to be honest with you, if you social media wise, Instagram is where I'm most active. And so there's two, there's Inside the Mix podcast, and then there's Mark Matthews, producer. But you'll find links to the Instagram and the YouTube through the website. So I would just start with the website and then you can
figure it out.
Sort of navigate your way there and then go where you please, I guess. The bounce rate might go up. You might just leave straight away. I don't know. But yeah, check it out.
It's a risk you're going to have to take.
It is.
All right. Well, have a good rest of your day. And
I will do. And you as well. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Well, that was such a great chat. I really hope you enjoyed it. And thanks again to Mark for coming on the show. Thanks so much for listening to the FM podcast. If you like the show, please tell your friends and give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Or you can also help us out by just telling a friend about the podcast or posting about how much you like it on your socials. Whatever you can do, we'd really appreciate it. The FM podcast is produced by me, Jen Fritz, for Fritz Media, with production assistance from Carla J. If you want to learn more about Fritz Media, check out our website at fritzmedia.ca. And if you want to learn more about the podcast, it's thefmpodcast.com. A big thank you to Said the Whale for providing the theme music for the show, and you can find them at saidthewhale.com. Okay, so we're going to go over with our song of the week this week, which of course is from Mark Matthews. This is from his EP Lost and Found. Here's Let You Go.
Bye. I'll see you next Tuesday.